The scripture this morning is from the 41st chapter of Genesis. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one. The seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, as are the seven empty ears blighted by the east wind. They are 7 years of famine. It is as I told Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. There will come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. After them, there will arise 7 years of famine, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. The famine will consume the land. The plenty will no longer be known in the land because of the famine that will follow, for it will be very grievous." And the doubling of Pharaoh's dream means that the thing is fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it about. "Now therefore, let Pharaoh elect a man who is discerning and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land, and take one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt during the seven plenteous years. Let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming, and lay up grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities, and let them keep it. That food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine that are to befall the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish through famine." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Our gospel lesson is Luke 12. If you are comfortable standing, I invite you to do so to honor the gospel. This begins with verse 13. Someone in the crowd asked Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But Jesus said to him, "Friend, who set me to be a judge or arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take care, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." He then told them a parable. "The land of a rich man produced abundantly, and he thought to himself, 'What should I do, for I have no place to store my crops?' Then he said, 'I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich toward God." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Rich did a good job of reading the Old Testament lesson, Joseph, but Joseph is a long story, and sometimes we just need to back up and hear the whole story and flow. You remember Joseph, son of Jacob and Rachel? He was one of the younger ones, but his father favored him over all of the others. And remember, there are 12 of them. They become the 12 tribes of Israel. And so, but the other boys were kind of jealous because it was obvious that Joseph was the favorite. His dad gave him a special cloak, and we refer to it as the cloak of many colors. It may have actually said the cloak with long sleeves, but it was an elaborate, beautiful gift, and it was special. Not all the kids got one, and so they were kind of jealous of him. And so one thing leads to another, and the brothers decide to kill him. But then they decide they can make a little profit if they sell him instead. So they sell him into slavery. They sell him into slavery, and he is taken to Egypt. And he is sold to Potiphar. Potiphar is a captain of Pharaoh's guards. And Joseph is very competent and capable, and he becomes the head of Potiphar's household. He organizes and manages the whole household, and Potiphar trusts him. But Potiphar's wife decides that she wants to seduce Joseph. So she tries to seduce Joseph, and Joseph refuses. He rebuffs her. And she does not take kindly and accuses him of attempting to rape her. So Potiphar has Joseph sent to prison for attempting to rape his wife. And he is in prison now with all the other prisoners there. None of them are listed or, illuminated for us. But there must have been a gathering somewhat. Two of the prisoners are special people for the Pharaoh himself. One is the royal cupbearer, and one is the royal baker. We don't know how they got in prison. But for those of you that bake, there must be something you can do that can make you in enough trouble to get thrown in prison. Figure that one out for yourselves. But in there, in the prison, the two of them are having dreams. And Joseph interprets their dreams correctly. And they realize that. And after some period of time, the royal cupbearer is restored to his position. He goes back to serving Pharaoh, and he's in the midst of serving him. And Pharaoh begins to have bad dreams. And he has dreams about seven fat ears of corn that are plentiful, and then seven withered ears of corn. And then he has a second dream, and it has seven fat cows, and then seven very lean cows. And he has these dreams repeatedly, and it's bothering him. And the cupbearer remembers Joseph, remembers that he was a good interpreter of dreams, and he said, "Say, boss, I know this cat I met down yonder, and maybe he'd be able to interpret these dreams for you." So they called Joseph forward, and Joseph hears the dream, and he hears it explained, and he said exactly what Rich read and loud, and all of us read together. The seven fat years will be followed by 7 years of drought and famine. And God directs Pharaoh to store up grain. Now, I was starting to do the math. They said he wanted to store up 1/5 of the grain each of the 7 years and then distribute it out over the following 7 years. Isn't there going to be a shortage in there somewhere? I guess you just don't eat quite as much. You can do the math later. We'll figure that out. It's a word problem. But he says, God says, appoint someone to be in charge of this and make sure that the grain and all the food is stored up so that when it becomes time through the drought and people are hungry, we can feed them and we can care for them. So Pharaoh says, that's a great idea. I'm going to put you in charge of it. And Joseph becomes the grand vizier. He's the head of the country beneath Pharaoh. He's very, very powerful. And he is in the midst of this when they come into the famine period. And his brothers are some of those afflicted by the famine. And they come to buy grain. But they don't recognize him because he's now dressed as an Egyptian. And he's all cleaned up and he's grown up. And so they don't recognize him. He recognizes his brothers, but the brothers don't recognize him. And there's a scene there where at first he does not let them know who he is. And he toys with them. And he's debating, I think, mentally in his own mind whether or not to be vindictive about this. And finally, he says, "No, brothers, it's me. It's your brother." And they fall upon each other's necks and weep. And there is closure. And there's forgiveness. So this is the story of Joseph and his life and God with him and his prophetic ability. And there's other lessons in there about forgiveness and about integrity and about storing up crops. It's good to store those up for the lean days. Isn't that one of the lessons we learn there? Melissa and I are going to try and get over to Grand Junction and visit her sister and husband and some of the clan that lives over there. I grew up in Grand Junction. I don't know if you know that. What used to be a lot of orchards. Those are gradually diminishing because people are buying up the orchards and building houses on them. But if you talk to orchard people, there's a couple things you need to understand. Some people will buy orchards thinking, well, this is what I think I'll just become an orchard person for the rest of my life. And within a year or two, they're broke and bankrupt. And a good orcharder will tell you, you have to plan for one profitable year out of seven. If you're growing crops, you can only depend on about one profitable year And that has to hold you. Sometimes you might get two profitable years back to back, but it also might mean you get 10 or more years that are not. So you have to plan and put away for a rainy day. Those seem to be pretty straightforward things that we learn, aren't they? But then we turn to Luke 12, and there's this problem here, you see. Here is this man. No, wait a minute. He isn't a man, he's a rich man. This is the parable that Jesus is telling. There's a rich man, and he has crops and land, and the crops bear abundantly. And the man stores them up. He has barns and silos, whatever, to store up all of his goods, all of his plenty, all of the things that he has. But he realizes that the ground, that this property is producing more than he can store. So he says, I'll tear down all my barns and I'll build bigger ones so that I'll have plenty and I'll be at ease. No matter how long I live, I'll always have plenty, and there will be plenty of grain, and it's all wonderful. Now, doesn't that kind of sound like what Joseph was telling Pharaoh to do, the storing up the grain in the silos for the famine years in Egypt? How is one to know whether to store up or not to store up? And why is this rich man being criticized? The title of the sermon is Looking Out and Looking In. Paya pointed out to me that I have it Looking In and Looking Out somewhere and Looking Out and Looking In somewhere else. I don't really care, as long as we get both of the looks in. You can look in first or out first or whatever you do. Pharaoh is looking out. Pharaoh is looking out for the people that are going to be hungry and that he needs to care for as a good leader, as a good authority. He's looking out for those in need that are going to starve. And he's preparing that and he's setting that up. And God has directed Pharaoh. That's an important piece anytime you look at it. If we know that God is directing us, then we stick with it regardless. The rich man is already a rich man. There was a rich man. That's the way the parable begins. His land has been producing abundantly. He has a lot of plenty, a lot of crops that have given him much, that have produced bountifully. And he realizes that he has all of that, but there's more that he can gather. There's even more on top of that. I remember I bought a truck from my dad. He had retired, and my dad was one of these that had everything in line, everything prepared when it came time for things. So for his retirement, he had IRAs and retirement funds and accounts and all of these things set aside. And his retirement made it very comfortable for them to have a good retirement. And everything was paid, the house payments, insurance, medicine, what have you. So I wrote a check to dad and I handed it to him. And he says, what am I going to do with this? He just didn't have that in his plan for what he was, how or where. It was more than he needed, and he wanted to give it back to me. And I said, no, this is not only fair. And my mom just laughed. But what am I going to do with this? Here's the rich man who decides, well, I'll just store more. I'll put away more. Is he equating his massive amount of stored grains with some status symbol? Is the rich man saying, if I have these huge barns, people will think more of me? Jesus says one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. That's an important message. You see, that man, the rich man, is looking inward, storing the grain up for himself, keeping it, holding on to it, so that no matter what happens, he'll have lots and plenty. But there might be people who are hungry outside of his properties. There might be people who need that food, who are in need of his care and his sustenance. So it makes me ask a question. Is it perhaps possible that this rich man who was not yet convicted of understanding what he should be about, is it possible that God blessed this rich man to bless the people around him. Is it possible that God blesses people to bless others through their blessing? Now, I know that's getting to be kind of a convoluted thing, but if you receive, it's like my dad. He had what he needed. They were comfortable, and I gave him something. What am I going to do with this? I think he actually gave it to my nephew, who at that point in time was broke. That's a pretty good way to do that. That's that outwardly looking. Looking outward, looking inward. John the Baptist said it pretty clearly in Luke 3. He's gathered with a crowd and he's preaching to them. You know, this is the religious gathering that Jesus joined and later became the head of when John was killed. But John said to the crowd, he said, if you have two shirts, give one to the poor. If you have food, share it with those who are hungry. That's a little more straightforward. And God directs, and God will direct us. I have to just think about these amazing United States. People are dying to come here to this land of prosperity. People are taking great risks. And they come here and they find great prosperity. We have been blessed. And we are blessed repeatedly. I pray that we can remember to be looking outwardly, not always looking inwardly. Amen.